and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to the Season is Here edition, as we are currently sweltering in the great state of Minnesota, and it's really hot, but guess what, Luke? We are just 1 week away until Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt come to the Twin Cities to call Gophers versus the Corn Cobs on Thursday night. It feels cathartic to me to an extent to actually get to talk about Gopher football and not recruiting or hypotheticals or anything more like that. I'm excited to see the bullets fly. But on the other hand, I hate this episode each and every year because it's win total season, baby.
Yeah, I know this is tough. We never actually talk about what goes into our thought process. And we don't talk about what we've picked. And you do this for full time. I do this as a very, very part-time guy. So we got the two perspectives, more the fan's perspective and the professional perspective. And I'm excited to get into each game and break them all down. I'm literally doing research on the fly as we go.
Which is very Luke Buer-esque. I would never want you to change, Luke, in terms of doing research ahead of time.
I appreciate that. Anything that we need to get off, basically any housekeeping items that we need to get done with here now before we get into it?
I don't think so. I would say this. I mean, we don't get PJ Fleck until Friday, one last time before Nebraska. You won't know who's calling the plays until after Nebraska. We'll get into that in the preview. We'll see if there's any injury updates from the head coach. I would tell you that if you already haven't, join Gopher Illustrated for the season. Have fun with my message board community, which is as strong as it's ever been. Come hang out with Gopher fans. I'll be at Jack's Cafe on Saturday night from 6 to 8 with Gardzi and Chip Scoggins from the Star Tribune. But come get behind the paywall. It's a buck for your first month. That gets you, I think, like all the way to Northwestern at this point. So if you haven't already, I would love for you to come support us here at Gopher Illustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that we should note is that we are doing a live podcast for those that want to join as well. So obviously you're doing one with Paranus Bear, should be fun. I'm going to see if I can make it. No guarantees. I have young kids and a family and the whole nine yards. It's hard to put these things together sometimes. But we are doing a live recording with Daniel House on August the 30th. And that will be, we'll record somewhere in the probably like 7 o'clock time frame, 6:30, 7 o'clock time frame. We're going to do our annual draft, right? We try and pick Big Ten honors. I won the first year, Ryan won the second year.
I will be repeating. I feel very confident in knowing what I feel very confident. I've done a lot of research. The only thing that I want to have us do each and every year, Luke, is make sure House doesn't win. I don't know how much longer House will be with us in the Minnesota media before finally some NFL team or college football team is smart enough to hire him. But I never want to let Daniel House beat me on something like this.
Yeah, you know, so far he hasn't found success. I feel like at some point he's going to find success and we're going to be screwed.
Oh, I can already tell you. I can already guess his first round selection, and you're going to look at him like, you're my little ginger hipster, Daniel House. I love that guy. But yeah, so August 30th, come hang out with us at Stubborn Herbs for a great cause, chair trophy. It's getting busy now, Luke. Welcome to football season.
Yeah, should be fun. Yeah, come there. We might have a special guest as well. We're still trying to work on that. Should be fun. It should be just a good time, especially if you're flying in, and you don't have anything to do, come and hang out and say hi and give a high five. And while you're at it, donate some money to a really good cause as well. Okay, let's get into this, Ryan. We'll go game by game. We always do. And obviously, it's so weird to me still, I just have to get this out there, that we open with a conference game. I know this has been kind of the norm for a couple of years now, but the fact that we don't start off with a non-conference slate still slightly bewilders me. But we'll start with the game on the 31st. As you mentioned, this is going to be a Huntington Bank game stadium. So will be the first opportunity for people to tailgate. Weather is looking great. We'll get into that in the actual preview. Nationally televised game as well. As you mentioned, Joe Klatt and Gus Johnson will be on the call. This is, what, the second time in 3 years now that they'll have done a game?
They were here for the Ohio State game, I believe, in 2020. Yeah, exactly.
Let's get into this one. We're not going to go in depth like we would a preview, but we will try and do our best to predict. And Ryan, I'm going to do my best to take some notes and so that we can come back to this, especially as we preview games and see how our early season preview has deviated from our in-season preview. So I'll let you take the floor.
Well, the first thing I want to say is before we even get to the Nebraska preview, the most important thing that I want you, the listener, to take away from this, and I'm also going to try and convey it in the written version of my preview, is the range of outcomes for this season of Gopher football is as wide as I can remember in my 12 years of covering them. And what I mean by that is if you're a mathematical person, per se, and you think of it as a bell curve, think of a bell curve. Well, historically, or at least for me in the last few seasons, I feel like the bell curve was a lot more narrow in terms of I kind of knew more or less that this is what that team was going to be. Well, this 2023 team is different. But as much as it says about Minnesota and PJ Fleck's team, I also think it says a lot about, there's a lot of unknowns also in the Big Ten West. We got a lot of new first-year coaches. You have a lot of brand new quarterbacks. Everybody in the West has a brand new quarterback. And you don't really quite know how all the pieces are going to fit together. So that is the most important thing I want you to take away from this is I'm going to give a win-loss projection. But that projection, like if you want to be plus or minus two of me this year, I get it. I just think that there's so many things that we have to figure out yet about this Gopher team and about other teams in the Big Ten that it's as difficult as it's been for me. And again, in my 12 years of now doing this, to try and prognosticate and try and be as accurate as I possibly can. And I have been dreading this episode for weeks. I've been dreading writing about what my on the record prediction is, because the truth is I like to think I know more about Gopher football than anybody else on the planet that's not within the complex. But it's just so tough to try and get a read on things when you don't have all the information. So that's the thing I want to get on the record first, Luke. Does that make sense in terms of the bell curve analogy?
Yeah, I think the bell curve analogy makes sense, especially for those that are a little bit more technical in nature. I think generally speaking, when you lose as much production as Minnesota has, it's hard to see. It's hard to have a good grasp on what could change. And this is going to be a norm kind of in the transfer portal era, right? Even in the NIL era as well. Ultimately, PJ Fleck in year 7, right? There's a little bit more stability. So I think we have higher expectations than we would in previous years. You know, one, when was the last time we got a coach to year 7? Glenn Mason, probably. It's been a while, right? So there's some stability there. But ultimately, I think it's fair. And the other thing that we always say when we do these predictions, you know, you got to take these with a grain of salt. Usually the healthy teams do better, right? This is especially true in the NFL. In college, it isn't always true, but health matters a great deal. And if this, you know, for instance, if Minnesota were to lose Ethan Calliope-Manis, Cole Kramer can step in and do well. But the reality is, like, their ceiling's probably lower. Is their floor? Has their floor also lowered? I don't know. But I think that their ceiling has definitely lowered, for instance. So injuries matter. And this roster is drastically different than last year and where we're going to get production. And as we all expect, it's offensively going to be quite different. We expect them to throw the ball a lot more. That's the other thing we just don't know as well. Anything else you want to add to that?
Well, I would say I know they're going. I feel like there are things, and we'll get into it, with each one of these teams where – with Minnesota, I know they're going to throw the ball more.
But I agree they're going to throw, but it's still PJ Fleck. And even when they threw the ball more, and like I know that they're playing to their personnels and to their strengths, Ryan, but even when they did throw the ball more, they still found a way to manage and milk the clock and run the ball quite a bit.
Well, they won so many games last year. And I think the thing you have to remember, Luke, is they won 6 games last year by like 25 or 30 points. So it skews all of the data more or less when if you win, what did they win last year? 9 games. Well, in at least almost half of those, you're winning by so much where you're just going to sit on the ball, milk the clock. I just look at the schedule, and we can talk about it just overarchingly, that it's the second toughest schedule in America. I mean, it's something that's been talked about all offseason. Fleck calls it the second most opportunistic. But I just don't see a way that you can sit. There's just no way I look at some of these games, and unless I'm completely off and Minnesota's winning by double digits in the second half against, say, a North Carolina, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and they can sit on the ball. Luke, I'm telling you, this is as explosive of an offensive schedule that Joe Rossi has faced in his time as a defensive coordinator anywhere.
Yes.
And that means yes. On the flip side of things, if Minnesota's likely going to be giving up more explosive plays, that means there's going to be more points scored against them, which means on the flip side, the offense has got to be able to combat that in peace and love. They're going to have to do it through the air because that's where most of your playmakers are.
Yes, completely agree. All right, let's get into it. So very first game of the year, again, Huntington Bank Stadium. This will be on Fox. This is a 7 o'clock kick on August 31st. This is a Thursday. Weather looks great again. Ryan, give us your insight and then prediction.
Yeah, Nebraska has actually got a competent coach now. Matt Rhule, if you've been living underneath a rock here since, in the last 12 months, they fired Scott Frost. It was clear that he was overmatched in Lincoln. They now have a known program builder in Matt Rhule from his days at Temple, Baylor. I think they got things in the right direction. They got a brand new quarterback in Jeff Sims, who's a Georgia Tech transfer that comes in. He's run for over 1,000 yards in his career. And it's seemingly, when you talk to Nebraska fans, and we'll get much more into the minutia here on the preview episode, but it's, yeah, he's a lot more mobile than Casey Thompson, but he's also got 30 touchdowns to 23 interceptions in his time as a college quarterback, which I think is pretty expansive in terms of a sample size. So how does that all go together? How does it look skill position-wise defensively? They brought over the Syracuse defensive coordinator and Tony White from Syracuse, and he's going to be putting in a 3-3-5 defense, which I'm a little bit curious to see how that looks. I would say this, luckily for Minnesota, they brought in their own coach from Syracuse and Nick Monroe here in the offseason. So hopefully he can share some insight this upcoming week about what White wants to do in terms of potential schemes and whatnot to Minnesota's offensive coaches. But I think it's going to be a tight game because it's game one. Nebraska doesn't really know what Minnesota's offensive play calling, offensive formation, situational things are going to look like without Tanner Morgan, Kirk mm-hmm. Shiraka, Mo Ibrahim. And on the flip side, Minnesota has no flippin' idea what Matt Rhule's offense and defense are going to look like because, yeah, you can go back and look at their previous tape and you can have, say, 60% of it right, but it's that other 40% that they're going to throw at you in game one and you just hope that you're ready to go. So that's where I think this game comes down to that second half adjustments for both teams. I trust Minnesota in year 7 versus Matt Rhule's staff in game 1, year 1 to try and figure that out. Plus, you've got a lot of players for Nebraska that, yes, they return, but they also have experience in not making great second half adjustments to me. So I trust Minnesota more up front. I don't expect it to be pretty on Thursday night, but I think Minnesota goes 1-0, something like Minnesota 23, Nebraska 17.
Okay. Yeah, I largely agree with what you said. I am curious to see. There's been quite a bit of turnover at Nebraska. You often see, you're often seeing on Twitter and whatnot. They've had a number of what you would think would be some key contributors leaving, right? So I'm interested to see how that all plays out for them. I guess my concern for them is the depth, and I think your point about the second half adjustments, like. For both Nebraska and for Minnesota, offensively, you're not 100% sure what they're going to be trying to do. So you're going to kind of go in with a game plan, then you're going to have to adjust. And I think both of them will have to do that. And who can make the better second half adjustments, and then who's just got more depth. And in the end, I agree with you. I think Minnesota does. But this is a game that I find scary too, because we know that Nebraska has some talent. So, in this preseason edition, I'm going to take Minnesota 28-21.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So we both got them 1-0 going into the first Saturday game, another night game against one of your favorite teams from the Mid-American Conference, the Eastern Michigan Eagles.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about Eastern Michigan? Be quite honest with me.
I know very little about Eastern Michigan. I know that it's on the east side of Michigan, probably.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Fine. Yeah, I know.
Here's what you need to know. Here's what you need to know.
I know very little.
So Chris Creighton's their head coach. He's been there now 10 years. And to be honest with you, he's been a model of consistency out there for them. They've been to a bowl game each of the last four full seasons, which is obviously a really good accomplishment for a MAC team. And just last season, they won nine games for the first time. Or actually, they won nine games in 2022, which ties them for the most wins in program history for them. So they're obviously pretty – I'll say this. They're better than that Bowling Green team that came in here in 2021 and beat Minnesota a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Offensively, they're going to be led by Samson Evans, who's the running back, someone who ran for over 1,000 yards last season, went crazy against Arizona State to help secure them that victory. They're going to be replacing a starter at quarterback as Austin Smith takes over for Taylor Powell. But my questions for them offensively are – on the offensive line. They're going to be old up front, but they lost their best lineman who has one of the greatest names in college football I think I've ever heard. I'm pretty sure it's Sidy So, which is an outstanding football name and just name in general, who is a fourth round selection of the New England Patriots. So can the Eagles up front, as with most MAC teams, can they withstand a Big Ten front? And then defensively, they've got some work to do on their defensive line because they lost the MAC player of the year on defense in Jose Ramirez, who went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They return a lot in terms of linebackers. They return most of the things in their secondary as well. So the TLDR with Eastern Michigan is they remind me of like a Jerry Kill coached NIU team. They're tough. They're physical. They lost some of their best players from last season, which is obviously good, including the MAC player of the year on defense and Jose Ramirez. But this is just a game that is going to be a grit fest. It's going to be Minnesota's got to show up. Eastern Michigan gets to play Howard before they play Minnesota, so I don't know how much they'll show there. But I just trust Minnesota being able to have more skill within them and being able to overwhelm Eastern Michigan up front at times. So I think this game is a lot closer through 40 minutes or three quarters, and Minnesota pulls away with a late touchdown in the fourth. Something like Minnesota 28, Eastern Michigan 10.
Okay. This is the sort of game where you want to get away without injury, right? But you also want to make sure that you don't play down to your opponent. Interested to see how this kind of younger group of Gophers is able to handle this kind of test. It is going to be a night game at 6:30 again at Huntington Bank Stadium. Ultimately, I will take the Gophers. I'll take them. Let's say I'm going to say it's a high scoring affair. 38-21.
So just to be clear, Luke Buehr has picked Joe Rossi's defense to give up 20 or more points in the first two games when in the last six games of the season they didn't allow more than
21 both games, man. 21 in both games.
Shockingly, the Joe Rossi hater is now already saying that Nebraska and Eastern Michigan. I can't wait. You're going to be picking Ohio State to come. Or when Minnesota goes to Columbus, they're going to put up 63, according to you, Rob Smith.
It's early season stuff.
Jeepers creepers.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right, so we both got them 2-0 into what is arguably the litmus test game.
Yeah.
Of 2023.
Travel to Chapel Hill.
Travels.
Yeah.
To Chapel Hill to take on the number 21 North Carolina Tar Heels. Luke, can you name the potential Heisman Trophy contender that North Carolina has?
I think his last name is May. I can't remember his first name. Is it Drake May?
I'm just proud of you for not naming him his brother, who is a pretty good basketball player for North Carolina, Luke May.
Yeah,
Luke May. It is Drake May.
Drake May, yeah. He's a halfway decent player, I think. He's pretty good.
All right, I suppose.
He's pretty good.
Mitch Leidner or Drake May?
Yeah,
I don't know. Chris Strebler or Drake May?
Asad
Abdul-Khalik or Drake May?
I think at some point we have to like actually try to unpack the history of Chris Strebler. Like, honest to goodness,
he should have a 30 for 30 at this stage of his life. To be honest,
honestly, like how did Minnesota just screw that up so bad?
Jim Zabrowski and Matt Lyman.
Oh, yes. But I mean, just like, oh, that was so incredibly bad.
Outstanding people. I have a lot of questions about them as talent evaluators and talent developers for an offense. But
yeah.
So with North Carolina, it's Drake May,
mm-hmm.
the all-world quarterback, likely first-round pick coming up here in the upcoming NFL draft. But the thing that we all are going to find out about North Carolina in the first 2 weeks is, what does it look like without Phil Longo? Well, does that name sound familiar to you? It should, because he is now the offensive coordinator at Wisconsin, formerly Drake May's offensive coordinator just last year in Chapel Hill. So the question is going to be, North Carolina opens the season with South Carolina, who's, I think, a pretty viable SEC team. What does it look like in game one without Phil Longo? What does it look like? Does North Carolina's star transfer receiver from Kent State get cleared? I know the NCAA came down and said he's not going to play, but I've seen some momentum things on Twitter that make me think that he is going to be cleared. And if that's a thing, I think he's going to be a top 100 pick in the upcoming NFL draft as a receiver. So does Drake May have one of his top targets? But the big question for me on this game is, what does North Carolina's defense look like? Because North Carolina averaged 34 points per game last season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How did they end up losing five games, you may ask? Well, that'd be Gene Chizik's defense that gave up over 30 points per game to opposing offenses. And I think about the recent history of PJ Fleck offenses versus ACC defenses.
Mm-hmm.
And Minnesota's obviously had a lot of success in the trenches. So that's going to be one of the things I look to see, is if Minnesota can generate a pass rush around Drake May or not allow him to escape the pocket, Minnesota's going to have a viable shot in this game. This is the first game of four to me that are true coin flip games, where I would say Minnesota has no less than a 35% chance to win. And you could probably argue somewhere past 50%, but it comes down to, what do you think? Does it come up heads? Does it come up tails? I'm not sure. If it comes up heads and you think Minnesota wins this game, well, it's going to be a shootout. They're going to win 34-30, you know, something like that. Ethan Calliope-Manis is going to have a big day. It's going to be a lot of explosive plays on both sides. If Minnesota loses this game, it's because Drake May goes off like Heisman quarterbacks tend to do. He's one of the best quarterbacks that Minnesota has faced in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And with this being a game in Chapel Hill, I think to me that ultimately gives them an advantage. I still have some question marks about Minnesota's cornerback too. How does it look with Darius Green starting alongside Tyler Newbin?
Mm-hmm.
How does Jack Henderson perform against quality Power 5 competition? So until I start to get some of those questions answered, I'm going to have this as a loss for Minnesota. I'll say Minnesota loses in Chapel Hill to number 21 North Carolina, 30-24. But Luke, I am very intrigued to see what the over under in this game is. If it's not 50, I'm smashing the over.
Okay. North Carolina has somewhat of a similar, but also just slightly more difficult schedule coming into this game. They open at a neutral site with South Carolina, then play Appalachian State. So obviously,
if we've learned anything about college football in 2023, you better not sleep on App State in September.
That's fair. Yeah. So they have kind of a similar road to Minnesota into this game. I do think that they will be a favorite, you know, given the home field advantage, but just the expectations with the quarterback, etc. I think this is where, you know, this is obviously where Joe Rossi kind of makes his money, right?
That's the matchup of this game.
Yeah.
And we'll have plenty of time to get into that in a month, but it's going to be Drake May versus Joe Rossi. Yeah, it's Ethan Calliope-Manis' first road start of the year. Mm-hmm. It's Greg Harbaugh returning to North Carolina, where he's from. But it's a lot of different things that come into play, where I feel like the national perception of this game is North Carolina wins this game 80% of the time. I think that number is way too high.
Oh, I agree with that.
I would say Minnesota wins this game no less than 35% of the time.
Yeah.
And if this line is something like North Carolina -7.5 or so, that's way too big, because it's too big for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the thing we're going to find out at the end of the year, and if you remember this in 3 months, great for you, but it's going to be what national perception is versus what I think the accurate perception should be. are very much off in games like these. That's why you've seen some national prognosticators say Minnesota's potentially going to go 5-7. Well, I have a hard time seeing that unless a lot of things really don't go right for Minnesota. But this is one of those games where I feel like people don't give Minnesota enough of a shot. And it's going to come down to how do both defenses perform? Is North Carolina's better than we think? Is Minnesota's worse than we think? That's going to be one of the things to watch.
No, I completely agree with that take. And I think from a line perspective, obviously injuries can fluctuate this quite a bit. But I imagine it's going to be anywhere from three to eight, right? Which is a pretty wide gap. But I think this is going to be a lot closer. I think that North Carolina pulls it out. And I'm going to go... they're going to go 24-21. Be a close one.
Of all the games, you have Drake May putting up 24 points.
Yeah.
And you have Eastern Michigan.
It's a Joe 21. Rossi defense.
Luke, I have. All right. So here's.
I really like the number 21.
Yeah. We both got them 2-1 going into what is going to be the sleepiest game of the entire year, even though they haven't announced it for an 11 a.m. kick. I would be absolutely bewildered, gobsmacked, choose your Dan Barrero adjective here, that if the at Northwestern game isn't an 11 a.m. kick on BTN or Peacock or ESPN, whatever it may be. If you've been living under a rock for the last 6 weeks, boy, do I have news for you, because Pat Fitzgerald is no longer the head coach of the Northwestern Wildcats. There was some hazing allegations that came out. It seems to be a lot of proof behind them. He has been fired. Now it's first-year defensive coordinator turned interim head coach David Braun, who came over in January from North Dakota State to run their defense. Well, just seemingly things continue to go from bad to worse, because considering in 2022, Northwestern didn't win a game on American soil. And now they've fired the beloved child of Pat Fitzgerald because the program wasn't being run correctly, which I totally get. Same thing I would have done. But, Luke, I think Northwestern, I think they're over-under for the win total this year is 3. It's not looking great for Northwestern, Luke.
Yeah, I don't really envision where they have this miraculous season that, you know,
to me, a
claps back at all the haters, right?
Like, is somehow making a bowl game,
yeah.
Which I have a hard time believing, because
yeah,
we've seen how inept this offense is. We've seen years of mediocre to lousy to horrible play at quarterback. Now, Northwestern is one of the Big Ten teams, like everybody else was, besides Minnesota, to bring in a brand new transfer quarterback to start for them. And they've got Ben Bryant, who racked up almost 6,000 passing yards and 35 touchdowns to 14 picks in his last two seasons at Luke's favorite Michigan school, Eastern Michigan, and then Cincinnati last year. But my hesitation with anointing him as a good quarterback is this. Luke Fickell, Wisconsin's now coach, was the head coach at Cincinnati last year. He took 3 transfer quarterbacks this offseason, and none of them were named Ben Bryant. So what does Luke Fickell know about Ben Bryant that others don't, that he doesn't believe he's at least a Big Ten caliber of quarterback? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I don't think Northwestern has struggled offensively in recent years more than you can know. They're very sound defensively, but in the end, if you can't stay on the field, it's kind of hard to play defense, and their defense isn't as strong as it's been in years past. I forget the defensive coordinator who left. God, what was his name, Ryan?
Oh, that's going to bug me. We'll look it up.
But, yeah. I mean, but yeah.
If Ben Bryant's going to get the ball to somebody, his name's going to be A.J. Henning, who they took from the portal from Michigan. A lot of expectations for him because former Maple Grove running back Evan Hall is now with the Indianapolis Colts. So do they have anyone on offense that can make a play other than A.J. Henning? I'm leaning no. But defensively, you mentioned it. I mean, they lost a couple of players to the portal after Fitz's firing that were some of their promising young players. One was an offensive lineman who's now at Auburn. Another one was a safety who is now at Ohio State. And another one was a linebacker, I believe, that is now at Florida State. So the good young talent that maybe they were hoping on helping them this fall has now transferred away. The secondary is the strength of the defense, but boy, do I put that in air quotes, because that front seven has a lot of issues. So the toughest part of this game to quantify for me, Luke, is where's Northwestern at mentally?
Yeah,
they have
for sure.
had an absolutely tumultuous last 4, 6, 8 weeks. And now they're going to finally get to play football, and that's great. But they weren't very talented to begin with. Now they're without their unquestioned leader of the program in Pat Fitzgerald. David Braun has been there a total of 8 months in his entire life. Didn't really recruit any of these players. And it's, are they going to say it's them against the world, which I've seen some t-shirts that
they already
are very interesting that I don't think are incredibly correct, I would say. But I just have a hard time believing Northwestern can put up enough of a fight offensively to where the last three games in this series, Minnesota's won each of them. They've done it by an average of 23 points per game. And to me, nothing really changes in a sleepy game in Evanston at Ryan Field. So my pick for this game is Minnesota 31, Northwestern 10.
Yeah, I don't see a situation. I don't see a situation where Minnesota doesn't kind of win walking away. I'll go with Minnesota 28-3.
Yeah, that seems like a very Big Ten West score. Seems like a very 11 a.m. kick at Ryan Field score.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we both got them then. So what do we got them?
3-1
going into the final game of September, the final non-conference game of the season against what I believe to be a better team than that Georgia Southern team that came up in 2019. And that would be Luke's favorite Sun Belt team.
The Raging Cajuns.
He wears their home field stuff very proudly.
Always.
Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajuns, which, what a name, by the way.
Just, yeah.
So what you need to know, at quarterback, they're going to be led by a guy by the name of Ben Woolridge, who had 15 touchdowns, 5 interceptions last year. There's a lot of expectations for him to become one of the better quarterbacks in the Sun Belt. They lost their number one rusher from last season in Chris Smith. They lost their number one receiver from last season in Michael Jefferson. But there's a lot of optimism around Ben Woolridge in terms of being able to lead that offense. But to me, it comes down to who's he throwing the ball to. Defensively, they're pretty good up front in their front seven. I mean, they're athletic. They might be a little bit smaller. So we'll see how Minnesota's offensive line handles that. But to me, the issues for them are in their secondary, where they lost their best player to Alabama via the transfer portal, who is a corner by the name of Trey Amos. And then I would love for you to try and figure out this safety, who is a PFF darling, someone that I believe was all Sun Belt last year. I think his name is Cam Pendisco, which they lost their best corner. They lost their best safety. And to me, this is a game where Minnesota's got to get the passing game going, because overall, I do think that this is a better team than Georgia Southern was when they came in 2019. I think this is a team for Louisiana that is hoping to win a Sun Belt title. Mm-hmm. I think they're over under this season in terms of total wins is 7.5 or 8. So this is a good team. Again, there is no team I look at on the schedule, and even your non-conference games, where it's Eastern Michigan won 9 games last year. Louisiana went to a bowl game a year ago. There is no Colorado or Western Illinois or New Mexico State on the schedule this year. Louisiana is a viable team. So to me, it's not another blowout, but you're able to get to that Michigan game with 4 victories. You're able to end the month of September 4-1, which I think is very key for this season. I'm going to say Minnesota sneaks it out 27-17 at Huntington Bank Stadium.
Interesting. I was trying to do a little research on the Raging Cajuns. Offensively and defensively, they weren't phenomenal last year, but they were decent. I think the Gophers are going to win this game. I don't know. I just don't know how much they're going to improve either offensively or defensively. So I'm going to take the Gophers. I'll take them 31-17.
Yeah. Again, I think all of these games are going to be close. Like, if you want to pick a game where you don't have to pay attention in the second half, Godspeed, because I just don't believe that game exists on the schedule other than maybe the Northwestern game. But even then, we've seen sleepy, mm-hmm, 11 a.m. kickoffs, which, again, I'm projecting that to be, we don't know yet, at Ryan Field go really sideways really quickly. So we'll see how it all kind of plays out. But 4-1 going into what I think is the best team that Minnesota has faced in years.
Yeah.
When they get to host Michigan on Saturday, October 7th. Number 2 Michigan, Luke, what do you know?
Yeah, so, you know, arguably one of the better better quarterbacks in the country. One coach that really wants to just get out of college football as well. So this might be his last hurrah. I do think that this will be one of the more well attended games because as you and I both have predicted so far, the Gophers are going to be 4-1. I think there's a chance they might be ranked against the Michigan team. Maybe not.
If you lose the North Carolina game and you're 4-1, you're not going to be ranked.
I think there's an outside chance. I'm not saying it's guaranteed, but I think there's an outside chance that they're ranked. But more than likely you're correct on that. But I think that people will be excited. There'll be some optimism. Weather should be nice in October, right? It should be still warm, still pretty warm. People will be excited. Might be a night game. One of those kind of nationally televised games. Is it CBS has the afternoon one and I think NBC has the evening one, right?
I think that's right.
I think that's correct. So my guess is it's very possible. I don't know the other schedules, but I think it's possible this could be one of those games flexed there. A lot of eyeballs on this one as well. Ultimately, though, I just don't see the Gophers getting it done against a really good defense. And with their running back returning, Corbin, who is amazing. I would imagine if he doesn't get up to full speed early in the season, he should be by this point.
What did you call him?
Isn't it Corbin is his last name?
Luke, he's one of the best running. He's Blake Corum.
It's been like 6 months, man. Corum. Blake Corum. Okay.
Luke.
JJ McCarthy, though, right? I got that right. I have no notes in front of me.
So here's what you need to know. Yes, JJ McCarthy, former top 50 overall prospect, ended up beating out Cade McNamara. Cade McNamara now at Iowa. We'll get to them in the next game, but someone that in his first year as the starter, 64% completion percentage, 22 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. I'd say that's pretty good. He's got the prospect pedigree. They're expecting him to take a jump. Mm-hmm. Yes, Michigan did lose two guys to the NFL as pass catchers and Ronnie Bell and Eric Schoonmaker, but they got plenty of talent back. The reason why I think Michigan wins the college football playoff this year, which also gives you a little bit of a taste of, yeah, I think they win the Big Ten East and the Big Ten in general, is because of their running game. You mentioned Blake Corum, someone that was a Heisman contender last year, but don't sleep on Donovan Edwards as well. I think they're the number one rushing duo in the Big Ten, if not the country. I think both are going to be in the Doak Walker conversation. But what really gets me excited about Michigan is their moving company up front. They have won the Joe Moore Award the last 2 years, I believe, as the best collective offensive line in college football. Yes, they lost two guys to the NFL up front, but they've replaced them with guys from the transfer portal, both Pac-12 guys, I believe one's from Stanford and one's from Arizona State. But they're just so good up front, and they just run the ball on anyone, and they have two of the best tailbacks in the entire country who will both be NFL guys. The thing you need to know about is Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl, who runs the Senior Bowl, one of the most successful postseason bowls for NFL draft prospects. They've got like 20 guys on the list to potentially be. I mean, it's going to be ridiculous.
I think the
next NFL draft, I would be shocked if Michigan doesn't have double digit guys drafted, which is bonkers. I mean, that's Georgia level talent. And that's how good I think they are. I mean, defensively, they're also really good. They lost no linebackers and added one of the best transfers in college football in Ernest Hausman from Nebraska. I don't have any questions there. My question for this game from Minnesota specifically becomes this. Can you stop Michigan's running attack? Because what Michigan wants to do is they want to run the ball down your throat, and then they want to put J.J. McCarthy in action off play action. The kid can move around the pocket. The kid has the arm to make any throw on the field. But can Minnesota stop Michigan's running attack? I don't think so. Minnesota has not won at home against Michigan since – I don't even think you were alive, Luke. It was 1977.
Well, they should have won. What was that Tracy Clay's year?
That was Jerry Kill.
Or Jerry
that
Kill.
Was nine shifts in a motion. Yeah. Matt Limegrover doesn't understand that
won.
The clock is running because he didn't know Drew Wolitarski. He thought it was a touchdown. They were down at the two.
Yes.
Yes, but to me, this is a much different Michigan team.
Yeah. Oh, no question.
Back in. I'm telling you, I think this Michigan team is wild. I mean, they are just
But at what point do you think that the shenanigans of Harbaugh could be a distraction?
Who is self-suspended for like the first 3 weeks of the season. So yeah, this will be a second game back when they play. I'm saying this, if you are a college football fan in general, you should make it to this game. I mean, it's going to be the best home game in terms of atmosphere, a lot of talent on the field. If Minnesota can stop the run, I think this can be a fun game. If they can't, it's not going to be a fun game. It also comes down to Ayton versus JJ McCarthy. But I mean, either way, I think Minnesota hangs with Michigan for a while. I don't think they hang with them for 60 minutes. I got Michigan 34, Minnesota 17. Putting Minnesota's record at 4-2.
Yeah, I have them losing this game too. I had 35, 35-17. So we were very close there. Ultimately, I think that, you know, I've heard the McCarthy talk that he's going to take this jump, Ryan. I'm curious to see if he can do that. There were moments last year where you thought you saw it, and then he'd make a really kind of dumb mistake.
He struggled with, like, the one throw I always saw him struggle with, or maybe it was the few games that I put on and it was just this throw, but it was the deep ball.
Yeah.
He would have guys wide open, have a step or two on a guy, and he would just miss. It would either be too far to the side, too deep. But if JJ McCarthy figures out a deep ball, I don't know how you stop this Michigan offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that ultimately they will be somewhat run dominant. I think McCarthy is the question of whether or not they can, how good
they
can be.
They're going to be a great team.
Yes.
If JJ McCarthy just plays like he did last year.
Yeah.
They're going to win the college football playoff to me if JJ McCarthy takes a step forward, which I would expect him to.
All right. So this takes us to our bye and a good opportunity to talk about home field apparel. If you are going to the Gopher game here against Nebraska, it is a gold out if you didn't know, and home field has a couple of options in gold. Make sure you check out their website. Go to homefieldapparel.com. It's some of the most comfortable, also very unique kind of retro designs that should be very unique relative to other Gopher gear that your friends might have. Go to homefieldapparel.com and use the promo code GG23.
And that's where I've said it before, I'll say it again. It is some of the most comfortable and unique Gopher clothing you will find on the market. I guarantee if you put in Home Field Apparel Minnesota and you look through it, you're going to see something that catches your eye. You're going to then wear it to a Gopher game or out somewhere, and someone's going to come up to you and say, hey, where did you get that? You're going to tell them, you're going to look unique. And these are great, great, whether it's sweatshirts, whether it's sweatpants, whether it's t-shirts, whatever it may be, I know it's something to wear. When I got my Home Field Apparel, my wife stole it immediately because it was so soft and comfortable. So we can swear by the quality. We can swear by the uniqueness. It's something that you're going to be excited to wear wherever you may go. So you can get 15% off your first order if you use the promo code GG, as in Gopher Gridiron 23, at checkout. 15% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com if you use the promo code GG23.
Yeah, and they don't just have Minnesota gear. You can also check out their Can't Miss Off Kickoff for 2023. It started on August 21st. They've got all sorts of gear from like bomber jackets to hats to whatever. There's a ton there. Check out their website again, homefieldapparel.com. All right, so this takes us out of the bye, Ryan. Into Iowa City, where the Gophers, again, have struggled mightily in the PJ Fleck era to find a way to bring home the Floyd of Rosedale. I think we can both agree that in previous seasons, the Gophers have done everything but win the game, right? They've run for basically darn near 300 yards last season, had a late turnover as it looked like they might be going in to take the lead. But ultimately, Ryan, this team just hasn't found a way to get over the hump against Iowa. You know, even in like 2019, for instance, they really struggled against Iowa. You got to give Iowa a lot of credit in what they've been able to do to make life difficult for the Gophers. But the Gophers will head down on August 21st on a Saturday to that pink locker room, which, by the way, I still don't quite understand, but you know, whatever. Could we argue, Ryan, maybe put it in a different context, could we argue that that is a form of hazing by Iowa?
I mean, maybe in 2023 that
maybe
is. I mean, I would also argue it's hazing by Iowa just to continue to employ Brian Ferentz as their offensive coordinator.
Oh, my goodness. To that fan base? Oh, that's hilarious. Okay. But, yeah, give us the breakdown. It's interesting that Minnesota is going from Michigan to Iowa, and Iowa will have a former Michigan quarterback leading them.
They will. As Luke said, Minnesota will have their bye week before this game. So Minnesota is going to hit the road recruiting for a few days, get in some extra days to game plan, while on October 14th, Iowa's got to travel up to Madison to take on Wisconsin. So the week before Minnesota's on a bye, Iowa takes on Wisconsin. We'll see if that matters anything. But the question on everybody's minds is this the year nepotism doesn't remain undefeated for offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz? Because there is no more excuses with that new contract and the clauses within it, taking a pay cut, but needs to be 25 points per game, because now you have a competent quarterback in Cade McNamara. Now, as we record this in late August, Cade McNamara is not healthy. He got injured at a practice, and as the BTN was there a week later, he still wasn't practicing. But it truly doesn't matter, because Iowa's schedule is softer than Charmin in those first few weeks of the season and just in general. Luke, can you name Iowa's schedule? Not a shot. Utah State, not good. On the road against Iowa State, who is in the midst of just some their starting quarterback is no longer on the team because he gambled on Iowa State games. Their starting tailback, Jarrell Brock, just left the team because he also gambled on Iowa State games. Iowa State and Matt Campbell are going to be god-awful this fall. You can't tell me otherwise. Then in week three, they get to host Western Michigan, who is in year one of a rebuild, lost all of their best players to the portal. The only reason you would watch that football game if you're a Minnesota fan is to see Donald Willis try and combat Luke Lachey and Eric All at tight end. And then finally, their toughest game on the schedule is going on the road to Penn State. I believe it's a whiteout as well. But
oh, is it really?
If you look at every other game on the schedule, you can make an argument that they're going to be favored in every other single one, except maybe the Wisconsin game. That's how easy the schedule is for Iowa.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not telling you, I'm not bemoaning that as someone. That's just the reality of why it is. And that's why I'm going to pick Iowa to win the West more times than not. But you have Cade McNamara. You have hopefully Caleb Johnson taking the next step in terms of their tailback. You got Luke Lachey and Eric All at tight end, who they're going to try to do their best TJ Hawkinson and Noah Fant impression. Defensively, it's Phil Parker. I don't think you really need to get into it more than that. But you've mentioned this game historically, or even just in recent memory, because college football is a weird game, and it's filled with these weird streaks. And as many people know, Minnesota has not won a football game in Iowa City since 1999. I know that. You now know that. And guess what? Head coach PJ Fleck is tired of being asked about it, and I get it. 2021, you have over 40 minutes time of possession in Iowa City, gain 11 more first downs, have 132 more yards, and you somehow lost the football game. Why?
Because explosive plays.
Explosive plays, and you sucked in the red zone. You had three field goals. That's not going to beat Iowa. In 2022, you ran for 312 yards against one of the top run defenses in college football and still lost. How'd you do that? Well, you were once again absolutely horrible in the red and green zone, as you had three different possessions and within the Iowa 30, resulting in 0 points. Mm-hmm. Do you understand now why I will continue to pound the table and say Minnesota has found a way to lose this game
More
than Iowa has found a way to win it? So, to me, both teams are in the same talent tier now, which wasn't the case when Fleck took over. And this is where – dramatic pause. I'm going to pick Minnesota to win this game. Because, to me, they've gotten every bounce to not go their way, especially offensively. For whatever reason, they just become completely inept in the red zone. And I understand Phil Parker does that to a lot of people. To me – this is your second of the coin flip games that I talked about earlier, where North Carolina was the first one. This is the second one. You're on the road at number 25, Iowa. You haven't won there in 24 years. I get it. But you can't tell me there's not a reason why Minnesota doesn't win this game less than, say, 40% of the time. Why? Because it's Iowa City? Because they're the same talent tier.
Yeah.
They really are to me. They haven't been good up front. Iowa, they're expected to be better. Minnesota, we'll see how much of a step back they take on the offensive line. But it just feels like this is a year they no one is going to pick them to beat Iowa because it's on the road. Iowa's this preseason darling, and I'm a part of that. Like I said earlier, I'm going to pick Iowa to win the West, and I have. But it just feels like this is a game where Minnesota finally gets off the schneid. Minnesota wins 20-17 in Iowa City, and people can stop asking when will PJ Fleck beat Kirk Ferentz.
It's interesting because I was actually going to pick Minnesota over Iowa here, but my kind of logic around this was last year we saw how much Iowa struggled to run the ball at times, right? They're definitely going to have better quarterback play, assuming that McNamara is not hurt, and you know, injuries aside, etc. I liked what I saw from Caleb Williams last. It's Caleb Williams, right? It was the running back.
Yes.
Yeah. I liked what I saw from him last year. The question is that offensive line, which historically has been really good. I know they were young last year. You know, to be able to sustain throughout an entire Big Ten slate, they need to be able to run the ball. I think the Iowa defense is superb, and you never want to bet against Phil Parker. But I will say this. I do think and believe that the Gophers will be more explosive this year than they have been in years past. That is something that a Phil Parker defense has been able to exploit. But you know, in the same vein, Minnesota has tried and tried and tried again to be ball dominant, and it hasn't worked. And ultimately, I think that this is why I'm going to pick Minnesota this year here early in the preseason. I'll pick Minnesota to win. It'll be very close, 24-21. But I will take Minnesota just because I think the change in approach might be just what is needed to win this kind of game.
You know, things you would have asked me, because Luke and I don't know what each other are predicting ahead of time. Us both taking Iowa is going to really upset Mr. Greek, which I'll say again. Well, again, it comes down to these coin flip games.
Yeah.
Where
Would you say
it's come up tails for Minnesota six straight years, including the last, you know, three of the last four. It's just been like, how did Minnesota find a way to lose this game? And I just look at so many of the other games that Minnesota has played in recent memory, and they found a way to win. I just think they finally figure out a way to win in Iowa City. We'll see.
Yeah. Ultimately, these teams are really close, Iowa and Minnesota. I do think that Iowa has found a way to upgrade at quarterback and maybe even at receiver, which they weren't very good last year. I just think that, you know, the coin flip, right? It was a coin flip the last couple of years. Maybe the coin finally flipped.
It's come up heads three, four, five, six straight times between Fleck and Ferentz. And I would argue the first few games of this series, Minnesota just was outmatched talent wise. They're not anymore. The last, you know, three, four games.
Yeah.
Where they've been pretty equal in talent, it's come up every time for Iowa. So I'm going to say it finally comes up for Minnesota, which leads us into the final game of October when Luke's favorite Michigan coach, Mel Tucker, comes to town. Because after cashing in on that Peach Bowl victory in 2021, Mel Tucker signed a $95 million contract.
What a deal for that man.
Yeah, how'd that look in year one, Luke?
Yeah.
Not great, Bob. He won 11 games in 2021 and then didn't make a bowl game last year, including, many Gopher fans will remember, Minnesota went into East Lansing and absolutely slapped. I mean, they just did whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah, they threw the ball really well, too. Can we go back just real quick and then get into the Michigan State game? I think after the bye, outside of Ohio State, I think all five of these games are basically coin flips. I know that you're calling the whole season four, but I think Iowa, Michigan State.
Ohio State at Ohio State is a coin flip.
No. I said aside from Ohio State. Oh. Aside from Ohio State, the Iowa, Michigan State.
You give Purdue more credit than I do.
Okay,
we'll get
that's
into
fair.
Why I'm not as bullish on Purdue as maybe some other people.
Okay, but yeah, Michigan State, this is interesting. Again, another coin flip
game. I'm also
game.
Not as bullish on Michigan State as you are, apparently.
I think that Minnesota probably wins this game 60-65% of the time, but I think that there's a chance that this could be another blowout. I don't know. Peyton Thorne's gone. I get that. He's off to greener pastures.
So the final
if you know
day
what I'm
of
saying.
The transfer portal being open, Michigan State loses their starting quarterback to Auburn and Peyton Thorne, who was just named the starter there. They also lost their second best receiver last year and future NFL guy, more than likely, Keon Coleman to Florida State because Jaden Reed's off to the NFL. So they've lost their starting quarterback, their best receivers. They're going to be replacing their quarterback with either Noah Kim or Caden Hauser, who are very much unproven. And what are they going to look like defensively? I watched Minnesota kick the crap out of them up front. Mm-hmm. And the other thing to note with this game specifically is this game for Michigan State comes just 1 week after they play the most important game of the entire season for any Michigan State Spartan. And that's on October 21st, they take on Michigan. So just 7 days before they come to Minneapolis, they're taking on Michigan in their most important game of the year. So my question is this, again, purely hypothetical, probably doesn't matter, but this is where my mind goes.
Yeah.
Is Michigan State going to want to be here if they get trounced again by, or say even if they win? You have that emotional letdown or that elation either way. Are you going to want to bring that same emotion and energy 1 week later as 18 to 23-year-old individuals? You going to want to come and play in late October in Minneapolis after playing your rival just the week before? That's my question, because I watched Joe Rossi win the matchup against Luke's favorite former offensive coordinator, Jay Johnson, last year. I just think there's too many questions for me, plus the Michigan game the week before. I think that matters in college football.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say Minnesota gains bowl eligibility before November, wins this game 28-20 and putting them 6-2 on the season.
All right. So one thing that I have a relative that is a huge Michigan State fan, and he and I messaged about this back and forth. And I wondered last year, you remember when former Gopher linebacker, namesake, right?
St. Burns. I can picture his face.
Burns, Evante Burns. Oh man.
You're thinking of Jaquandus Burns.
Brown. Oh, yeah. Okay, Brown. He's no longer with the team. But do you remember
his most notorious moment in college football is swinging his helmet against Michigan in a hallway.
So, but do you remember? So there's that, right? And it kind of felt like a couple different times it seemed like they maybe had given up on that squad had given up on the team. And then they came back and they beat Illinois, if memory serves, right?
They might have beaten Illinois, but they also beat Wisconsin last year, which didn't make any sense.
They were just kind of so bipolar on the season. I'm just curious, you know, if it's really up and down again, if Mel Tucker can keep this group together. I am going to pick Minnesota in this game. I think this could be again another high scoring affair for the Gophers. I'm going to give them a 38.
Jesus.
Yeah, I'm going to go 38 points, and I am in Joe. I mean, Joe Rossi.
How many points is Joe Rossi's defense giving up?
I'm just going to go a shootout. 32? I'm just picking a shootout for the shootout's sake. I'm going to go 38-29.
I will bet you, boy, we're going to have to take some side bets off the podcast here.
I thought we were going to keep track of them.
I mean, hey, you, whatever you want to wager, I'll bet Mudslingers for you.
Okay.
Which for those of you for who are coffee, like, what in the world is Mudslingers besides some vernacular? It's the local coffee shop here in town.
The coffee hut. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Okay, yeah, Mudslingers. Are we doing the over-under?
We're going to have to do it like before each game when we have all the information, because I can assure you my takes.
But let's pick an over-under on this one. So
I think the over under for this game will be?
I'll set an over under, and okay. I will be taking the over, and I'll set an over under. You tell me if you'll take the under. So I've got it. I'll have it at 55.
I will take the under on a 55 point Big Ten affair in late October. Luke, you're making Daniel House bets with me.
I know. It's fun.
I'm going to go get some Mudslingers tomorrow and say, what's your credit card number? Jiminy Crickets.
All right. 55 over under. And I've got the over. You've got the under. You've got the under at 48. Okay. That's our bet. Mudslingers it is.
So that gets us to November, which.
Illinois.
If you're listening now and you're thinking to yourself, boy, Ryan's optimistic, wearing his maroon and gold color glasses as always, You're going to hate me now because I don't think November is going to go very well for Minnesota.
That's funny.
That starts with a home game against Illinois.
Yeah.
So Brett Bielema is 9-0 against Minnesota, 7-0 against them as the Wisconsin coach. And then each of the last two seasons, he's 2-0. How have they done it, Luke? By controlling Minnesota in the trenches. And now they have what I would say is the best front seven in the Big Ten West. Johnny Newton is incredible. Mm-hmm. Keith Randolph is going to be a future top 100 pick. Both of those guys are defensive tackles. I think Johnny Newton's going to be a first-round draft pick. On the edge, they got Gabe Yakus, who is honorable Big Ten as a true freshman. They got Tariq Barnes returning. Matthew Bailey was good for them. And then offensively, I understand they lose all-world tailback Chase Brown, who's now a part of, I believe, the Cincinnati Bengals. Luke's favorite guy, touchdown Tommy DeVito,
gone.
Is now gone. They're going to be replacing him with Luke Altmaier, who is a former Ole Miss quarterback, has prospect pedigree as well. It comes down to me. They return four of their top six offensive linemen. Bart Miller, their offensive line coach, is as good as they come. I'm going to keep this short, sweet, and simple. Until Minnesota can show me that they can beat a Brett Bielema team in the trenches, I'm not going to ever predict them to win the game. And that's where I think this game at home is a disappointing one for some. But Illinois wins this game 21-13 in one that Minnesota just doesn't figure out how to handle things up front.
Yeah, I had Minnesota on a loss here as well. I had it closer. My biggest question is their offense. Like, DeVito was just good enough to really help them. They're also without Brown, the running back, well, and Brown, the safety. I think they were brothers, right? And they both went to the NFL.
Correct. They lost, I think, three players in their secondary to the NFL. That's the big question mark in Illinois is, they have a great front seven, but their secondary has got a lot of question marks behind them. And then offensively, what does it look like without Chase Brown? What does it look like without Tommy DeVito? They've got Isaiah Williams there, who's one of the best slot receivers in the Big Ten.
Who's that running back, though, that was injured?
So much trust in them up front.
Do you remember the running back, though, that was kind of the Thunder? Yeah, he was hurt like all last year, though, right?
Yeah, but that's one of the questions I have and why I'm not picking Illinois, because Illinois' schedule isn't crazy either.
Yeah.
When you look at Illinois, they have probably the most entertaining game of the Big Ten non-conference slate when they have to take on Kansas at Kansas. I think that's an important game for both of those.
Yeah.
But you look at their crossover games, they get Penn State at home. They have to take on Maryland, who I think is going to be an improved team. But then they also will probably face a Tom Allen-less Indiana team in late November after this Gopher game. Yeah. So Illinois is another team that's got a schedule that is very conducive. Illinois should have won the West last year, found ways to lose it in November. But I've just seen this game too many times from Brett Bielema against Minnesota to where if you want to win this game against Brett Bielema, especially in November on deer opening weekend, you better be able to bring it in the trenches, and I just have my doubts.
Yeah, I'll take Illinois here as well. I had Illinois winning this game for a lot of the same reasons you did. I'll take it 17-13 Illinois. It's going to be a low scoring affair.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So we both got them at 6-3, and that gives us the first road game in 3 weeks when the Gophers travel to West Lafayette to take on Ryan Walters' Purdue team. And this is also going to be the first dose of the air raid coming to the Big Ten West. And as Graham Harrell comes and pairs up with Hudson Card, and they are going to try and make sweet music together in year one. Hudson Card, former top 100 prospect from Texas, played for the Longhorns in limited opportunities last season, had 6-1 touchdown interception ratio. We're going to see how that plays. People remember running back Devin Maccabee running through Huntington Bank Stadium on a long 60-something yard run to put the game away. Here's why, and here's part of why I'm skeptical on Purdue, especially in this specific game. How does the air raid look in mid-November in a cold type of environment?
Fair question.
Again, hypothetically, I'm assuming this game in Indiana is going to be in the 40s, 50s maybe.
Yeah.
I just want to know, how does it play? How does it look? Mm-hmm. The other thing that is probably not quantifiable, but I'll try to quantify it, is Brick Haley's their defensive line coach. So I'm going to immediately assume they're not going to be good up front. I'm biased here. I get it. I've said it before. I'll repeat it again. Minnesota's 2022 D-line room was one of the most underperforming, if not the most underperforming unit in the PJ Fleck era. And Brick Haley was a part of that. So I'm not going to be bullish on them up front. Along with having a brand new offense in the air raid, they're also going to switch from a 4-3 to a 3-4. So we're going to see if they have the personnel to run that in year one, like Ryan Walters likes it. I have some doubts. And that's where this game for Purdue comes 1 week after they travel to Ann Arbor to take on that Michigan team, who is arguably one of the most physical teams in the country. So we're going to see where they're at, in mid-November. They'll have been on the road the last 2 weeks. I'm skeptical of Purdue in year one. I think getting to a bowl game is a really good outcome for them. But I'm also really inquisitive to see what the air raid looks like in potentially cold weather. So I'm going to say Minnesota wins this game, gets to be 7-3 on the season. Minnesota 27, Purdue 17.
Yeah, when I thought about this game, do you remember the game a few years ago where it ended up being cold, like a little bit of it ended up being a little bit of snow, and I don't think Minnesota was expected to win, but then they just ended up trouncing Purdue.
That was the Joe Rossi game back in 2018, where they took on a white hot Purdue team. They fired Rob Smith the week before. And I think Purdue had scored 30 or more points in each of their last six games, and then Minnesota allowed 13.
Yeah, and ultimately, like that was a really good Purdue team. And like you said, they were white hot coming in, but they wanted nothing to do with that weather, right? And I kind of wonder if that would be the situation here in this game.
I think you're kind of grasping. I mean, as I said earlier, I mean, I think I'm curious to see what passing the ball 40 times and
that's my point.
November looks like, but
it's very possible the weather could be good too. Ultimately, I don't think these teams are all that far apart. I just remember that game really well, thinking like, man, I don't know if Minnesota has a chance.
Minnesota and Purdue talent wise are that far. You think they're closer.
I think this is closer to a coin flip than you do. I think Minnesota probably wins 6 out of 10 times.
I think it's more than that. I would say this. I just think Jeff Brohm's defense really gave Minnesota's running game a lot of issues historically.
Yeah.
And now that that's gone, I guess I'm a little bit more skeptical, especially with Ryan Walters switching defensive schemes from a 4-3 to a 3-4. Does he have the personnel? Brick Haley, of all people, is coaching that defensive line. I guess I have more doubts than you do about that.
Fair.
If you think they're going to win that much, you also got to be putting a lot of faith that Hudson Card, their former Texas Longhorn quarterback, is going to be really good, which I think Hudson Card is going to be better than what people think. The smart play, if you look at the historical data, is year one West coaches don't historically do very well.
Sure.
I understand the portal has mitigated some of that in terms of reload versus rebuild, but I just think betting on this being one that Purdue sneaks out is one I guess I wouldn't.
I was going to make this like a 3-point game ultimately, but you just talked me into.
No, I mean, if you want it, I mean, I don't think I have a game within a touchdown right now, which I probably got to figure out.
Yeah.
That's not the way it's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, but this is the thing about really early season predictions. They're worthless.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. I will go with Minnesota. I'll go with 35-14. They're going to blow them out.
Could you love yourself some Greg Harbaugh and Matt Simon?
I'm ready for explosive plays. Maybe I'm just willing this into existence. And maybe
you're
that's
all
my goal.
The Brevin Span Ford,
Corey big Coons, time.
Daniel Jackson hype train, baby.
Big time. I've been on the Daniel Jackson hype train.
Oh, stop
way
it.
Too early.
Stop.
It. I have receipts from drafts. I will show you. Okay, let's jump into Ohio State. The Gophers will travel to Columbus, Ohio, November 18th. I think the Gophers will be anywhere from a 14 to a 28-point underdog in this game.
Boy, why don't you be more specific there with a 14-point hypothetical spread, Luke?
That's where I'm going, man.
That's like saying, yeah, I think the Gophers will be favored anywhere from 1 to 21 points.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think Minnesota keeps this game particularly close. I think Ohio State is... it will be interesting to see the Joe Rossi defense, who is built to deny or to mitigate explosive plays, go up against arguably the most explosive offense the Big Ten has to offer year in and year out. And that's what Ryan Day is trying to do. So ultimately, that'll be an interesting test again. I know that they had their moments in that opening game in, what was it, the 2021 season. But ultimately, the Avalanche overtook the Gophers, and they just couldn't stop enough of the big plays. And I'll just go with it. I think Ohio State wins this game going away. I think it'll be about 42-21.
Okay, so for some context here, Minnesota has beaten Ohio State twice since 1966. But to me, if there was ever a year, it could be this one. Now, if you want a sliver of hope here, Ohio State, I'm skeptical that they're college playoff football good.
Yeah.
But I think they're just going to be really damn good instead, if that makes sense. Like, I think they're going to be in that Penn State tier from last year where, you remember, I'm not saying Ohio State's going to be bad, because Penn State last year won 11 games by an average of 20-something points per game. I just think that they're not in that same tier. And why I'm skeptical on that is the quarterback and the offensive line situation. Plus, they give up way too many explosive plays on defense. We'll get to that in a second. But why do I think there's a sliver of hope if you want one? Well, this game will be played right before the quote-unquote game, a.k.a. Michigan versus Ohio State. Why does that matter? Well, if you look at last year, Ohio State really didn't play well the week before. Maryland gave them a run for their money the week before because it looked like Ohio State was potentially looking ahead. Well, if Ryan Day wants to get back in the win column, I wonder if he's putting more effort and energy towards Michigan in 2 weeks, considering he's lost the last two, and maybe Minnesota can surprise. Now, I'm still going to tell you, Ohio State's incredibly talented. They have the best wide receiver tandem in college football, and Marvin Harrison Jr. That sound you hear is you saying in your head, boy, I feel old today, when I'm talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. likely being a next top 10 pick in the next NFL draft. They've also got Emeka Abuka, who is incredibly, incredibly talented. They've got one of the best 1-2 punches at running back in the Big Ten, and Travion Henderson and Mayan Williams. But it comes down to explosive plays on defense. Michigan and Georgia averaged over 11 yards per completion against them last year. Plus, Penn State threw for 370 yards and 3 scores. I'm not picking Minnesota here. I'm not crazy, but I have a lot of hesitation with Marvin Harrison and Emeka Abuka going against whoever is the corner two for Minnesota. And I think they'll have quarterback figured out enough. I'm going to say this is 41-21 Ohio State, but if you want to hang on to a sliver of hope, it's that Minnesota can generate a bunch of explosives in the passing game. If they can, you're going to hang in the game with Ohio State. If not, just like every other Ohio State game you've ever watched, you got to put up points to win, and I have my hesitation.
I can't believe I did 42-21 and you did 41-21.
When you said that, because again, I've got this all written down, ready to go for the lovely people of Gopher Illustrated on Thursday. I was a little surprised. So we both got them at 7-4 going into the final game of the season.
Yeah, and this is at Huntington Bank Stadium. The Gophers have won the Axe the last two seasons. This will be... this is always a big game, regardless, right? This will be this will be the first year with Luke Fickell. Luke Fickell only coached the bowl game. Have to get my timeline correct. I'm very fascinated to watch Wisconsin this year, just in general. They're making pretty big philosophy changes from what they've had previously. History tells us that doesn't work very well. History also tells us that a group of five coach doesn't always translate to success. And I know that Luke Fickell did an amazing job at Cincinnati. He deserves all the credit in the world. I'm not suggesting this. I'm just trying to state that, history has shown us that nothing is a guarantee, no matter how successful you were at the Group of Five level. PJ Fleck, alternatively, has had some pretty decent success. Success is relative, is usually pretty relative, right? And I think the Wisconsin expectation is championships, is it not, Ryan?
Which is, that's a whole different discussion in terms of what reality is versus what I think casual Wisconsin fans.
Why was he hired? To win championships.
I have a lot of dreams and aspirations too.
Yeah.
I never said they're realistic, but yeah, I mean, that's why he's hired.
And then, but expectations also drive fan bases to be a little bit delusional, right? But the reason they hired him was to bump to that next level. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen in year one. I just think that's kind of a dangerous.
Well, that's what Vegas says. That's what the national prognosticators say.
Yeah.
Is Luke Fickell's going to get them to Indy? Luke Fickell's going to get them into the, you know, New Year's Six Bowl? Look, I think it's incredibly possible. I'm not betting on it.
No.
So here's what I would say. This will be, if this comes to fruition, Luke, this will be the third consecutive season that Minnesota enters the final week of the season to take on the Wisconsin Badgers with a 7-4 record, which is just a random and weird nugget. In the two previous seasons, they obviously won, which marked the first time the Gophers had won in back-to-back games in this rivalry since 1993-1994. I was 1 and 2 years old. Thank you for asking, Luke. The last time they won three consecutive games in this rivalry, can you name the years?
Oh, absolutely not. I'll go 60, 61, 62.
71, 72, 73. And so that's where you look at this team for Wisconsin. A lot of hype, a lot of hubbub. Everybody loves Luke Fickell. I think Luke Fickell was a great hire for them. Comes over from Cincinnati to run things.
Yeah.
And there is a lot hinging on the hire of Phil Longo, the air raid man from,
yes,
from North Carolina. Air raid in Wisconsin football is certainly going to be something to behold. Now it's going to be Tanner Mordecai as the starter. He's a proven guy, proven college quarterback. They also return Braylon Allen, Ches Malusi, one of the best 1-2 tandems at running back in the Big Ten as well. Defensively is where I start to say, why are we just overlooking this? Defensively, they lost Keanu Benton, who PJ Fleck has famously come out and said, more or less, Keanu Benton didn't really show up for most of the season for Wisconsin, but we figured out when he played against us tonight, yeah, he wanted to be there and he kicked the crap out of us, so we just decided to throw the ball. They also lost Nick Herbig to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Keanu Benton was the top 50 overall pick, and then they also lost one of Justin Gard's favorite coordinators in college football, someone he's got a picture above his bed on every night, Jim Leonard, who's now actually an analyst for Brett Bielema, which is, look at two former Wisconsin coaches teaming up together. Obviously, Jim Leonard played for Brett Bielema. But Mike Tressel is now the defensive coordinator. Long time with Luke Fickell. He's going to be bringing the 3-3-5 defense to the Big Ten. Same kind of thing that Nebraska has. So Minnesota's going to start the season with a 3-3-5 defense, end the season going against the 3-3-5 defense. Now, I'm going to attempt this linebacker name. I just know he's a really damn good linebacker. I think it's Maimon Najimita. He's really good. But who else among the 11 starters is going to be Keanu Benton, Nick Herbig good to mitigate the also loss of Jim Leonard? Because I think Wisconsin wins football games this year 28-24, 37-28, or excuse me, 31-28, something like that. This isn't going to be the Wisconsin of old. I just don't. I looked at that roster last year. And part of why I would imagine Wisconsin made the change from Paul Chryst to Luke Fickell is that was one of the least talented Wisconsin rosters I had seen in some time. Now, I know that they brought in a lot of transfers, especially on the offense, quarterback, receiver, offensive line. They brought in some guys on defense, certainly. But I have my doubts in terms of naming them a top 20 team. They're ranked as the 19th ranked team in the country. Now, their schedule, very conducive. I think their toughest game is Ohio State, and they avoid, I believe, Michigan and Penn State otherwise. But here's the thing. We've talked about these coin flip games, folks. I got Minnesota going 1-2 in the coin flip games right now. I'm going to say they go 1-3. I'm going to say they lose at home to Wisconsin. And look, if you want to switch this to a win, I'm not going to fight you. I'm as big of a skeptic on Wisconsin as you will find being this Big Ten championship contender. But to me, they have the edge in the running game. They have Braylon Allen and Chez Mulusi. I understand that Minnesota has won this football game the last two seasons without anything resembling a running game. But I just feel like banking on that 3 years in a row is a very tough thing for me to do. So I'm going to pick Wisconsin 21, Minnesota 20. And so that's where I have them finishing the season 7-5. And maybe more importantly, I have them going 1-3 in this coin flip games. I have them winning against Iowa, losing to Wisconsin, North Carolina, and Illinois. Now, before we kind of get more long-winded about that, what do you think about this game, Luke? Are you with me? I think you've been
shocking
to me.
I've been with you. I was basically like, how do I get them to 7-5? And then I just decided, like, I'm all for the changes they're going to make on offense. We're going to go 8-4. I'm going to have the Gophers winning for the third year in a row. I think the transition is going to be hard, and this is early, right? I have the right to change my opinion later in the season when we preview this game. I will take Minnesota. I will take them 28-27 for the victory.
So this is the more important part of this. I got them 7-5. You got them 8-4.
Yeah. I think it's reasonable they could be 6-6.
Back to these coin flip games because I want to drill this into people's head. If you want to take Iowa as a loss and you want to take Wisconsin as a win, go for it. If you want Minnesota to go 2-2 in these coin flip games, so flip the North Carolina game from a win to a loss or flip the Illinois game from a loss to a win. Okay. It makes sense. I mean, to me, there just shouldn't be a ton of discussion or banging of the table to say, yep, this is definitive, because the only two games on this entire schedule where, as we pick them, Minnesota will be 17-24 point likely underdogs are Michigan and Ohio State. I think those two teams are kind of in a tier of their own when I look at the other 10 teams on the schedule, because there's a feasible way you could win all those 10 other games. There's a feasible way you could win 6 of the 10, and then you're going to Detroit for Christmas again. I just think that it all comes down to what does Minnesota do in those 4 games. Again, maybe I'm not giving Nebraska or Purdue, in Luke's mind, enough credit. I mean, Minnesota certainly can lose any of the games on their entire schedule to me. I just think that in year 7 of the program, the floor is high enough. They have enough talent. They have enough playmakers where I don't see a Bowling Green type of situation happening again.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I got them 1-3 in the coin flip game. So they're 7-5. Luke's got them 2-2.
Yep.
So they're 8-4. If you wanted to go 3-1, well, they're 9-3 and probably going to Indy at that point, especially if you have them, say, losing to North Carolina, but winning against Illinois, Wisconsin, and Iowa, then yeah, if you have own all those head-to-heads, go ahead and book your trip to Indianapolis. I just think I would rather be a little conservative with this team than maybe a little bullish compared to previous seasons, because I want to see what it looks like with Ethan. I want to see what it looks like with a first-year offensive coordinator.
Yeah,
I want to see what it looks like with the pass rush. I think they have the talent to win the West. I just think I have too many questions otherwise right now as we sit here in late August to really bang the table and say, yep, just like it. Well, last year, remember, Luke, I was the one banging the table saying, yep, Minnesota's going to win the West.
Yeah, I remember.
I don't have that same feeling about this team or as much gusto or confidence, however you want to put it. They're capable of doing it. It's just to prognosticate that right now, I think, is a little bit too bullish for me.
Yeah, I think there's a reasonable argument to be made that Minnesota, Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, I mean, maybe even Purdue or Nebraska could all win the Big Ten West. And I think that's what's always fun about this league and what we're going to miss about it, right? But I think Minnesota, Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa are all the 4 that are probably more realistic to win it. It'll be a fun end to the Big Ten West, and I hope it's as crazy as it's been the last few years. That's my hope.
I think it's going to be Illinois, Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin all end up with an overall record somewhere between 7-9 wins.
It just comes
down to all of those head-to-head games, especially those 3 in the Big Ten West. Illinois is certainly capable of running the gambit against all three. So is Iowa. Probably so is Wisconsin. But to project that Minnesota is going to go 0-3 against them isn't the most likely outcome. It's not the most likely outcome for any of the four teams is to just go 0-3 against them. But to say going 3-0 against them is also the most likely outcome, I wouldn't say that's the most likely thing either. I think the most likely outcome for the Big Ten West is they cannibalize one another, and it comes down to potentially these final two games of the season like it has the last few years, because I don't think any one of the Big Ten West teams is in a tier by themselves.
No.
But why I'm picking Iowa, Wisconsin, or Illinois above Minnesota is because their crossover games are much easier. They either avoid Ohio State and Michigan altogether. They only have one of them. I mean, that matters. That's a conference game. It just, you know, as the kids would say, Luke, it just be like that sometimes, though, you know?
All right. We want to thank everybody for listening. Hope to see you at Stub and Herbs on August 30th as we raise some money for the Children's Hospital, as well as for Team Jack and the organization that they support. Yeah, it should be fun. And thank you.
Got a preview episode coming out probably on Monday or Tuesday, going over what we know in terms of injuries. Little preview of the Nebraska game, and then folks,
season's
August
here.
31st, you can finally don that maroon and gold, head to the stadium.
No, only the gold.
It'll be sold out. That's right. It's a gold out. Make sure that you tell people that you're going with. It is a gold out, but we're finally single digit days away from a Gopher football game, and it's a beautiful time to be here.
Again, if you don't have any gold apparel, go to homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code GG23 for 15% off your first order. Again, thank you for listening, and go Gopher.